Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist, online editor, and post-production supervisor in New York City.
And I'm Josh Petok. I'm a colorist for episodic TV, reality TV, and music videos. One thing I'll bring up with you guys that I started looking up before we started was the history behind, like, when I first heard about Resolve being something that was attainable to, like, anybody, it was about 2008, right? So they introduced the R100 that was, like, 150 grand. And at that point, I was like, oh, at this point, like, that's something that is going to be available in more people's hands. But, you know, 2010 rolled around, and it was, you know, NAB 2010 was Resolve 7 for $1,000. And then NAB 2011 came around, and it was Resolve 8 free. So it was like, it's just unbelievable that you think about, like, 2008, that's really not that long ago.
Well, it's kind of become, you know, a long time in technology terms. So that's the one thing, is things are happening so fast that 2 years doesn't, you know, the whole evolution of it can wrap it. I mean, just think about some of the things like Smoke. Smoke was $15,000 and now it's $3,500, and they're talking about the exact same issue. You know, all of a sudden people are worried that it's going to threaten flame, you know.
Well, I mean, I think there's also an issue of the target market. You know, basically Blackmagic came in with Resolve and said, we're going to totally change what the target market for this product is. So instead of, you know, trying to really satisfy the high end, which they still service, they really, really targeted the kind of the small shop or the you know, the person working on their own. And I think there's some of that same strategy is what's going on at Autodesk. They're really trying to have a product for the lower end of the market in Smoke for Mac that is going to be missing features that are available in the higher end product, the Smoke Premium and the Flame product.
Yeah, and I think they're really torn over that. Like, one of the things about Blackmagic is that they really championed getting nice tools into the hands of a lot of people, whereas Autodesk is really concerned about helping the masses while still retaining that flame revenue. You can really sense it in the way that they're going about it.
Totally. There's also a big leap between the market that's sort of the target for the Smoke for the Mac and then the flame stuff. There's a huge price gap there. You know,
right.
It's not a tiered product set. It's really just one extreme or the other. And the question is just, like, is that going to work? Because in a lot of ways, Smoke is still not, even though it's much more accessible now as an editor, is still not really an accessible product for, like, just everyday users.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a really complex product, and a lot of people who like Flame think it's kind of cool to have access to it, say, on their laptops, but still, for most users, it's daunting, you know?
Did either of you guys actually install it? Because the only thing I've ever heard from anybody is, oh my God, I opened it for 5 minutes and it crashed, or I can't get this running, or it seems like it was kind of a false start for them too.
I actually have been putting a lot of time into it. You know, I wouldn't say an incredible amount of time, but I'm really interested in it for what I'm doing. So I definitely did install it and have been actively training on it. So, and it's been working really, really well for me. I mean, one thing I would say is there's some idiosyncrasies about how editing works and things like that. There's a tremendous amount of command keys. So there is a sort of a cumbersomeness to getting used to it. But overall, running wise, it's been really solid for me on a 12-core Mac Pro.
I managed to get it running. I've had some conflicts with my setup, so I've actually taken it off my regular main machine, and I've put it onto a laptop machine.
Yeah.
That I rarely use. But honestly, like, it's just, I'm, you know, I went into it hoping to see some major differences between what I used to see in Smoke and what was there now. And, you know, while they did totally change the editing interface, still, like, the thing that's daunting is, like, if you don't know anything about Smoke, if you've never used to Smoke before, I don't see how you can get that box running, you know, starting from square one, because you do still need to set up, you need to set up your media storage, you need to configure your system, and that stuff hasn't really been streamlined.
Right, right. Like, for instance, the intro box is still a little bit confusing between what is your project and what are you monitoring at. So that's an initial place that you trip over. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to refine that so that they're... One of the big things that people have mentioned recently, which is really, really true, is this idea of bouncing off the interface. And a lot of people say that if you want to go mass market, you can't have a product that really repels your users in their first moments. You really need to get them going quickly, or else they'll just move on, you know? So
yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that like Resolve version 9 has really streamlined is it's still got the user login and then the project window, but it's totally streamlined the setup, and they've just basically gotten it as straightforward and simple and just get up and go as they possibly could. That's something that Autodesk still hasn't done with Smoke, and it's like if you're selling a product targeting at mass market, that's really going to be critical. Like people are just going to get turned off.
That makes a lot of sense too, because if you think about it, they're bundling it with this camera, so there's going to be a lot of camera people who aren't familiar with interfaces and dealing with all that stuff. It's like, oh, I could just open up Resolve and load in my footage.
I think what you're getting at is basically, you know, tying it into the camera and getting sort of mass market acceptability, and that's definitely a big part of the design of version 9. And then they're also really, really trying to make it into a dailies tool. You know, they added audio support, they added syncing, timecode syncing with third-party sound. So they're really trying to get it streamline it for dailies work. And it makes sense in a sort of DIT environment. I could totally see it really taking off.
Oh, totally. I think it's going to be not only just making it free, you know, for what it's worth, you know, a lot of people wish it was still a little bit expensive, but this idea that you can get on it for free and learn it and then upgrade when you need to is really, you know, feet forward of Blackmagic. But the other big thing is once people start using it for dailies and get used to it there, they'll have no reason to not grade with it later or possibly buy the full version later. So I think the audio support is going to be another watershed for them, totally.
Yeah, the audio support is definitely important. Then the other thing is, like, I'm seeing more and more people not even bothering to, like, people who can afford to buy the full version not bothering to buy the full version because the upsell is not really that huge if you're not doing higher than HD.
Totally.
And if you don't need the noise reduction. Like, I mean, Walter Biscardi is he runs a major post house,
right,
and he's really heavily into Resolve, but he doesn't own a Resolve license. He just uses the light version.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like he needs it. And
like, Juan, do you actually use noise reduction? Like, do you find it useful at all? Or
yeah, I don't find it useful as a noise reducer. So, when you're trying to do we're in the process of working on a project where we're basically just being contracted to do noise reduction, and we would never go the Resolve route for that just because it's not a very good sort of temporal noise reduction technology. What it's really good for is actually kind of smoothing things. It works really well for that. So anytime I have like a beauty shot and I want to just kind of smooth out skins, I'll just do a qualifier on the skin and then use the noise reduction on that. And it does actually a really great job of like just smoothing out skin while still retaining detail and sharpness. So it, you know, it has its purpose. I'm not gonna I think it's worth the $995 just to be able to do 2K, because even if you're only working in HD, sometimes you need to make a DCP from an HD film or something, or you know, you want to render out, you have a client that brings in red and they want to end up with a 2K or 4K master. You know, you can't do that with the light versions.
Almost in a way, if they wanted to collect more money, they needed to make the delineation like 720p. You know, so 720p would have been fantastic for the web crowd, but then if you want to do HD...
I don't know if you remember, but when they initially launched it, like they had, I think they had like a limit of like nodes, like you could only do like 5 nodes or something.
Yeah, totally. It was a couple nodes.
I mean, you know, it's kind of a frustrating, I can totally understand from like the user perspective, it's just a frustrating, meaningless restriction, right? It's like you're going to say, oh, you can only do X number of things, but there's no hardware limitation. It's just strictly a software limitation. We're just trying to screw with you. And from Blackmagic's perspective, they make money selling the interface cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they give away 100 copies of Resolve Lite to somebody and they only sell 10 cards, that's still worth it. The cost of that additional copy of Resolve downloaded is cents, you know, to them. It's literally nothing. It's just the bandwidth.
The only thing that it really costs them is the R&D dollars, because it sounds like obviously it takes them a lot of money to develop, and they've taken it like to a completely different place too.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the way their model is designed in such a way that they're depending on growth to pay for the R&D, because the they don't charge for any updates. They haven't charged for a single update since they took over the company. Every update has been free. They're giving away the software, basically. And I mean, you know, in this next version, in V9, you know, you'll see certain benefits. Like, for some shops, it's going to be worthwhile to buy the new Decklink 4K card, because you might be able to do 4K in a properly configured system. So it makes sense. Like, there's going to be some hardware upsell. I think they still hope to sell the panels. Like, they see that as kind of a profit center. Like, you know, you get in on the ground floor with maybe just the basic software. You get the Tangent panels, or maybe the Avid Artist color. And then down the line, you realize, well, I could really use the big panels, and you spend the $30,000 to get the big panels.
And this is a perfect segue into Baselight Access.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, well, I could do 4K and all that stuff with this version of Resolve. Why should I shell out the extra money to go buy a full Baselight?
That's totally
true. I'm
playing
devil's advocate, obviously, here, because I think the Baselight actually has a lot of benefits to it. It's got a different style of working. There's a few, you know, other things in there that seem to me are a little bit more client friendly.
Like what?
Well, a lot of the stuff, like the scratch pad, I think, is really a good way to show people, like, okay, here's a bunch of different looks, and here's a lot of different saved options and things like that.
Yeah, one of the big things about Baselight that I think is really commendable for, you know, what's traditionally been, a, you know, I guess, a big iron company, is that they're trying very hard to give people a segue as well. I don't know if it's quite as market dominating at this point is sort of the Resolve Free versus Resolve panels, but they do have the plug-in, so they're giving people a shot, and then they're trying to make, you know, their hardware affordable in a certain sense, where, you know, people are saying, look, I can do Baselight Access and maybe, you know, bump up to Baselight 2 with panels or whatever, and you know, they need to close the gap a little bit more, but beyond that, they're trying hard, you know.
They're kind of fighting a current in a way, in that their install base, their user base, is really dependent on that high price point of entry to be able to market themselves, right? You go to a facility that has Baselight because you know you want a premium service at a premium facility. It's really being used for, like, you know, high-end commercial work and feature work. It doesn't get so much play in the kind of the episodic television world. It doesn't get so much play in the low-end feature world. That's really a Resolve-dominated market. It's really, really that upper echelon market that Baselight is in.
Yeah, I find that mostly the guys in Britain and Europe and stuff like that, Baselight has a much better brand recognition than it does over here. Even though there are some facilities around here that do use Baselight as well. But I'm just finding, just when I hear about people talking about it, it's usually, you know, people on the other side of the pond.
If you're looking at really high-end solutions, you're looking at Baselight and maybe Pablo, although the Pablo, I think, is kind of falling out of favor.
Definitely. And then one of the things, go ahead.
Or New Coda as well.
It's Filmmaster. Where is it sitting all of this? Because they're sort of getting lost in the noise a little bit, except for Jack Jones. He's making sure everybody remembers them.
Well, and Jack Jones also works on Luster and works on Baselight. And so he's not, I mean, he's a freelance colorist, so he's not afraid to branch out.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I think, you know, Nakoda's always, they have, first of all, they have great, the digital vision side of things, their suite of image processing technologies there is actually really, really robust and really powerful. And so they really
their
do
noise
have a place.
Reduction is insanely good.
Yeah.
And it's good, and then it's also slow.
that is true.
Yeah.
But they haven't really made a huge splash with their New Coda product. It's a good product, but it's not. I don't think it offers a real incentive over what Baselight offers at a similar price point. And if you want to market something, you want to market the more commonly known, commonly used brand. You know, you want to market Baselight.
Baselight has that momentum right now that's really strong, and it's tough to go around with some other products, because people often say, oh, well, what's that like compared to a Baselight, you know?
There is the question of, like, where does that Baselight Access product really fit in? You know, is it really, is a standalone shop, going to buy into the $50,000 product where they can get the Resolve equipped for, you know, for $40,000 or $45,000, you can get a full panel Resolve plus a system that's capable of like real-time 4K or at least real-time 2K. You know, you can configure a system that's going to be really, really robust at a price point that's less than the less robust base light configuration. So is that really a product that's marketed towards those guys, or is that where I think it's being marketed more towards is maybe like shops that are integrating with people that are using base light, or shops that already have base light but maybe need additional stations for conforming or for some lower end episodic work or HD work. Like, I think they're trying to kind of hit a little bit more of that lower market stuff, or the upper lower market, you know, the episodic work that's really being done in Resolve, or even a lot of the commercial work that's being done in Resolve. I think they can gain there by having a price point that's a little bit lower, so shops that are already using Baselight for the higher end stuff start using it for maybe lower end work.
Like their rate card, they can adjust that to compensate for the cost.
Exactly. I mean, if you're doing, you know, 13 episodes or 26 episodes of a series, you're going to have to kind of, you know, adjust pricing a little bit versus what you would bill for doing a one-off feature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at that kind of price point, a lot of these really high-end shops, they turn down the work because, one, the, you know, you don't want to put your you don't want to tie up your star colorist on a project for that length of time, or that's going to take up that much time, because you can be billing quite a bit more just to do a series of commercials or music videos or features. So you put kind of the up-and-coming colorist on it with a lot of a lower rate, but you want to tie up the big expensive machine with that colorist and that project. If you have the ability to add on a couple of more lower-end systems, then you can take those projects at a slightly lower rate, put the kind of up-and-coming colorist on it, and still be able to make a profit on the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the,
yeah.
You know what the key is to that is actually having people that are learning this stuff now. Like if they have all of these guys who have been on these boxes, you know what I mean? It's not like you can just, you know, pick up a book and learn Baselight or Nucoda or any of those things. I think it's interesting seeing like that they give access to the plug-in and stuff like that. And I mean, in town here, Nucoda is like, anytime you want to come by here, we'll teach you how to use Nucoda. Like there a lot of these companies, you know, their talent is getting stolen because of a Resolve being given away for free and everybody like just jumping on it.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, if you were not at a facility and you were actually sort of bidding on projects, if you take a look at what people are asking for, I mean, almost in a certain sense, Resolve is becoming like the Kleenex of color correction. So people need their projects resolved. You know, it's almost there. It's not quite there. But what I'll say is that, you know, nobody is mentioning really any other products. I mean, on occasion, somebody really naive will mention, you know, Apple Color. But that being said, that, you know, they're quickly educated and brought into the fold. So, yeah.
Didn't somebody on Twitter say, oh, yeah, I saw this job posting for like Magic Bullet Looks or something?
Right. You know, and then it's there, like, are people, oh, you know, it's the layers of the market speaking. But for the most part, if you have somebody semi-educated, you know, they're pretty much assuming that the people who are grading are using Resolve, and it's prolific. Yeah, it's already there mostly. So
yeah, I mean, it's the price point is right, and the usability is getting there, right? Because people are just, you know, you can jump on and sort of transfer. If you have some experience with color, if you have some, even with Magic Bullet, you can translate that into Resolve relatively easily. There's a little bit of a steeper learning curve for some of the other systems, you know, even Scratch and you know, Baselight certainly has a little steeper learning curve, but it also has, I think, in some ways a richer feature set. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
People do Prometheus was graded on Resolve, you know what I mean? Like people do amazing work on Resolve. It's not like you can't do it. It's just a question of like which button do you press. And that really brings up the bigger issue of exactly what is the value as colorists? What is our value as colorists? It's not the ability to know how to press the button. It's the question of when does that button get pushed, right?
Right.
But one of the big things that's happening is, speaking exactly to what you're talking about, is a lot of people now, because of the accessibility, want to give that exact talent a try. And as a colorist, one of the things I'm finding a nice niche in is helping cinematographers grade their own work because they feel empowered by the idea of twiddling the knobs themselves, when colorists in the past, or maybe colorists who got together with directors, really took their show or their film in a direction that they didn't like. And they almost feel like if they don't grade, then all of their efforts at the camera are going for naught. So that's two or three people I'm helping right now.
But do you think like you're maybe shooting yourself in the foot?
Well, no, but what I'll say though is that, you know, there's a billion places where we're shooting ourselves in the foot. I mean, we should all not use Resolve if we want to think that way, you know, because that's an accessible product. And so we shouldn't support it if we're worried about shooting ourselves in the foot. That being said, you know, I think one of the big things that's going into this is, you know, the people who are grading their own films. For instance, there's a $300,000 feature that I'm helping the DP grade his own film right now. I don't know if we could say that what he's doing color-wise is quite passable from a theatrical presentation perspective. That yeah. being said, the real question is, what's going on with the quality? People are in the past really used to the idea of nth degree quality, and our qualitative levels of what is acceptable are going down to a point where it's not so much that it's the talent pool isn't there or that a lot of people want to do it. It's what's acceptable is changing a lot, and it used to be a lot higher bar than it is now.
Well, we're just going to wrap it up here, but thanks for joining us on the Coloristos. I'm Josh Petok. You can reach me at Josh Petok on Twitter or www.joshpetok.com.
I'm Juan Salvo. You can reach me at juansalvo.com or on Twitter. I'm at j_salvo.
And I'm Jason Myers. You can continue the conversation until our next episode by joining all of us at liftgammagain.com, a forum for discussing all things color. See you next time, and thanks for listening.